Never mind.
I was gonna get myself some funny juice and see if this episode went any smoother than it usually does, which is impossible, but, you know, we push the boundaries of science here.
We are the video game scientists.
Yep. Good callback.
Thank you. And that's a good callback that's never going to get heard by anybody.
Never going to pay off.
No.
Welcome, everyone, to Podcasts Will Never Help You, or Pony, Not Associated with the Genuine Estate. My name is Juan, as in the Avatar. And I'm sorry, I'm blanking on your name.
Oh, my name is Scabby Pentecost.
Nice. I love the hustle.
Thanks.
Very good. So this is our podcast Will Never Help You. We are ridiculously broad, and we talk about things nobody cares about, except when we don't.
You know me. I'm a ridiculous broad.
You know something? I was going over our catalog. I think we talk too much about things that are in the zeitgeist.
You're right.
Sly Cooper Vore conversations aside, we do fall into that pit.
Well, I don't know what your Twitter feed looks like, but
yeah, okay. But what do you want to start with today?
Well, today I do want to talk about Into the Breach. So as usual, we'll start out with video games.
Let's do it. Let's get the hard stuff out of the way.
Yeah. And I guess that's fitting, since this game is a little bit on the challenging side. It's Into the Breach, once again, for our listeners, a game that came out, if I'm not mistaken, this week, from the makers of Faster Than Light, FTL.
Yeah. Indie darling.
One of the most acclaimed, and one of the things that probably helped spur the Rogue craze, right? It was probably that and Rogue Legacy, I think. Not to say that those are the, you know, creators of the genre by any stretch, but after that
all the sort of shovelware developers on Steam sort of were like, oh wow, this is a new tag that I can hop onto. Now I don't have to put all my time into open world survival and crafting.
No. You got it the other way around. I think that Rogues were the survival game before the survival game. Like they were the it game before the survival game.
You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't follow any of those Steam trends. I'm too busy working on my KD in Call of Duty.
I think the genre is rich enough so that there's still some cachet attached to the genre. Like, people don't instantly roll their eyes when they, I mean, I know there are some people, like, it's not to say that that's not what happens, but
I'm rolling my eyes right now.
Okay, well, there you go. But yeah, it's one of those. It is a roguelike. I guess the fast way to describe it, the quick and dirty way of describing it, is probably something like Faster Than Light meets Pacific Rim meets Advance Wars.
Nice.
Initially, when I first pitched it to you, I was like, hey, this is like XCOM. But
immediately my ears perked up like a hunting dog.
You just shot right, like you were gonna ignore me.
Like I woke up like I usually do when you recommend games to me.
You were just gonna one of these. Fuck.
I turned to my framed photo of Julian Gollop that I keep by my bed. And I just sort of nodded knowingly.
Yeah, exactly.
The original.
Well, there you go. You know, then you're one step ahead of the game. Then, like, you're ahead of me then, because I certainly did not know that.
Good.
Initially, I said it sounded a lot like XCOM, or rather, it played a, not sounded, but it, rather that it played. A, initially, I said it's, it played a lot like XCOM, but the more I delved into it, the more it really started to feel more like a puzzle game, more than XCOM ever did, where it still feels mm-hmm. like a strategy game, in that there are always options and planning that go into not only the encounter, the moment to moment encounters, but the planning, the considerations that you have to take in the lead up to it, you know, like the upgrades you make to the, your units or the decisions you make for which what fight you're gonna take, or you know the there's still some considerations aside from the battles themselves. So it's that part of it is what initially made me think that this is like a kind of a simpler version of XCOM, like an Advanced Wars-y type of XCOM.
It sure possibly. Sounds like XCOM,
but. Yeah, no, I think it's closer to a puzzle game than XCOM is, you know. I know that certainly there are like a lot of encounters in XCOM, especially probably in like the harder difficulties and such, where like it can kind of feel like a puzzle game at times. But I feel like you have enough of a toolkit there for it to feel more like a strategy sandbox.
Really?
Whereas yeah, because you know, I'm talking about XCOM. Oh. Like with XCOM specifically, is I feel like it feels more open in terms of the choices that you can make. Like with Into the Breach, you certainly have your toolkit, and like there's a surprising amount of depth. Like there's more depth to your units than you initially might perceive. But I feel like it is a little bit more limited, in terms of like what you can do, like the choices you have. Now what, aside from that, the thing that sets it apart is that you usually have, there are varied objectives, but your main objective is always going to be protect your power cells, which are just like these things that are scattered across the map. So not only do you have to like look out for your units, but more than that, your health points are basically the thing that you really want to prioritize, because what that leads to is that instead of approaching each turn with like, oh, how can I best maximize my damage to my opponent, it's almost exclusively you figuring out like, how can I best mitigate the damage to my health points, basically, by either just it's a lot about like it's a game that asks you to take space into consideration a lot. Like there's a lot about positioning that you have to take into account, so that element of it is pretty. I'm appreciating it. Like it makes me approach it more like a puzzle game than a straight strategy game. And what makes me think of it more of a puzzle game is like I said, you have to take space into consideration, and you can do that by having your units, instead of focusing on damaging your opponents. All of you, if I'm not mistaken, there are some moves that don't reposition your enemies, but the vast majority of them are kind of built around you being able to reposition, if not your enemies, then certainly like your unit. So that's very neat.
So far, this sounds to me like XCOM, but mixed in with all the shitty ice gym puzzles from Pokemon. Like, where you have to crack each individual pane, and if you crack another one, if you crack one twice, then you fall into it, and then you have to go back to the fucking beginning?
No, it's not like that, because this is good. No, but good. It's not, because, let me paint a picture, I guess, a word picture. Like, there's an enemy unit that is gonna attack one of the power cells, and it's gonna like basically take out one of your health points. It's right next to, it has two hit points. The enemy has two hit points. You have one of your units that can damage it for 1 point, which wouldn't be enough to take it out. And it's standing right next to a mountain range, which means that you can't push it out of the way, because otherwise it's gonna get stuck. So instead, what you do is you shoot at the target with the unit, and let's say that that particular projectile causes one damage, but it also pushes the enemy back one tile. Yeah. So you make sure that you're pushing the enemy into the mountain range tile, and in doing so, you damage it for one more hit point, and in that way, you get rid of the enemy before it can attack your power cell. So that kind of stuff is usually what you kind of have. Your general toolkit looks a lot like that, like the considerations you have to make. And it goes both ways. Like if you have a mech or any a unit that's next to an enemy and you're pushing the enemy into that tile, your mech is going to get fucked up too. So you really have to think about positioning in a way that you, I mean, at least me being a novice idiot strategy player.
Nice.
Good
burn.
And I only recently, like when I went back to Advanced Wars, did I start really paying attention to like movement. You know, instead of just looking at how many tiles I could move, I also started looking at how many tiles the enemy can move. So that's neat. And I'm really, really enjoying it. It feels very accessible. There are a lot of different difficulty levels. So okay. If it's not usually your bag, you know, strategy, this is, I feel like, one of the best possible ways you could get into the genre.
Now, okay, that was what I was going to ask you. Like, accessibility-wise, how is it? Because I've played Faster Than Light. I own it. Own a copy. It was a gift from a dear friend who hates me. Mm-hmm. Because I started it up, and they were like, oh, you need a mouse. And I was like, fuck you. And then I came back 3 weeks later, and I was like, okay, fine. And so I used the mouse, and immediately, like, I didn't know how to use the pause function effectively, but having, you know, that degree of, like, semi-real-time strategy is sort of, like, nerve-wracking to me, even if you have the ability to, like, pause and think about what you're going to do.
Well, this is... It's still... If this can give you, like, any kind of relief, know that all of Into the Breach is, like, turn-based. I've had 30 minutes go by without me doing a single thing, just looking at the board and thinking, like, this is a Kobayashi Maru.
You know what this sounds like to me? This sounds like turn-based Mega Man Battle Network.
Well, no, because... I could see where you might get that from my description.
I warn you, if you dissuade me from this metaphor, I will be less interested in playing it, because Battle Network is fucking tight.
It's basically a Capcom game.
Nice, dude. Nice. There you go.
The Blue Bomber himself is an unlockable mech.
That would be so awesome. Can you imagine?
I wish.
These sprites are not that far off from like early Battle Network shit.
I love that, and that's one of the other things I was going to mention. I fucking love the sprite work.
It looks very good.
It is so nice and simple and very, but like very evocative of exact, like, you know exactly what you're looking at when you look at one of the sprites, you know?
Yeah.
It's some of the best sprite work that, that I've encountered in a while. And the soundtrack is similarly very well done.
What a fun kind of world we live in, where it's like, it's 2018 and we're still talking about games like the sprite work is mwah. Beautiful,
because it's timeless.
Impeccable. Like, yeah, I know. I'm saying that's like, isn't that neat?
Pokemon lost me when they went 3D.
Oh no. Okay, like, that's the opposite though. Because I would pray to Game Freak to be like, give me the ability. Just even give me the ability to palette swap my baseball cap. Give me the ability to like adjust, like, whether I want it like jauntily backwards or like to the side like a ruffian, or like forward like I'm getting into the fucking business, like, and now I have like full granular control, like it's full fashion mode.
What if you had that level of granularity while also the game not also having the game not look like garbage? Wouldn't that be a thing?
I would rather it looked like garbage.
Really?
I 100%. It's not a contest.
I hate it. I just don't like it.
I think garbage.
I think garbage is a strong word for it. I just think there are a lot of designs, a lot of concepts that don't transfer, like they don't scan well as 3D models. That's just my opinion, I guess.
I think you're right, certainly, but like, having, first of all, it's as close to, it's the closest we've ever been to, like, a mobile port of Pokemon Stadium, which is excellent in my book. Just having that level of, like, dynamic animation and stuff, where you don't have to fill in the blanks as much with your imagination, that's great to me.
But the animation work is, like, it's hit and miss, you know, like, because I totally understand. One of the best things about, like, Monster Hunter and stuff is the insane level of animation that so many of those monsters have, where like you feel bad for like, because the way they animate, you're like, oh wow, that I really fucked that
it feels
that monster
yeah.
up. And not only that, just the way it conveys personality. Like, every monster has their own, like, you can see it in the way that they're animated. You know what kind of creature you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely one of the things I appreciate from Monster Hunter. But I never really got that from Pokemon. Like, it's... I mean, I don't know if I just never found the Pokemon that would have changed my mind about that, but...
You never...
I've never been blown away.
You never went toe-to-toe with a Furret?
Are those... Well, I feel like if any... No, you know what? I feel like if there were any animal... If there were any Pokemon that would be well animated, it's the guy with the jacket.
What?
The lizard jacket. Like, he's like...
Lizard jacket?
Yeah, he's awesome. Scrafty? I think his name is Scrafty.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Who's Scrafty? And it's really cool because it's like he shed the skin, like, as a lizard, but it's like a jacket.
What?
Yeah.
Scrafty.
And he's like a good-ass Pokemon, too.
Oh, that's rough. That's rough to
look at.
No.
I like Scrafty. That's one of the Pokemon designs.
Like, oh.
But similarly, I don't think it translates well to, like, a 3D model.
Okay, yeah, no, absolutely not. Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. It's, yeah. God, that's weird.
Hey, Pokemon's fucking weird.
Pokemon's fucking weird. Okay, it's fine. We don't need to go into keys and piles of garbage and ice cream cones and whatnot. Is there an ice cream cone Pokemon, or did I make that up?
Vanilluxe.
Oh, fuck.
Vanilluxe machine broke.
You had that one in the chamber ready to go.
Right there, ready. but yeah, no, to get back to the game itself, it's really, really, like, honestly, one of it snuck up on me. I was not anticipating this at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't on my radar. And it's really cool when that happens, when something just kind of surprises you in the beginning of the year. But I can definitely see myself putting more time into it. I already beat it, technically. Like, it's really cool. Like, you can set restrictions for yourself in terms of the difficulty. Like, you can... There are, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 4 islands that you can save, basically, before heading to the end, quote-unquote end game. I saved 2 islands, and I was like, fuck this, I'm going to try my hand at this before things go any more awry. And,
yeah.
I managed to eke out a victory that honestly did not feel super earned. I miscalculated, and one of my power cells was going to get destroyed. And each power cell has, like, an 18% chance to resist. It depends on your stats, but mine had like an 18% chance to not get hit, and the only time that it procced for this run was when I had right there when I needed it most. But I felt like I almost didn't really earn it, and that's to the game's credit. You know, like, when something happens that, like, lets you off the hook and you still feel like, oh fuck, this doesn't feel earned.
When you get
I gotta
that,
do this
when you get that good
right
RNG
way. Yeah, when I get that good RNG, that good RNGesus.
That's what it is, man.
But I'm definitely going to be putting some more time into it. It's really
every single word that has come out of your mouth for the past 10 or so minutes has been
effusive praise. No, I have literally no bad things to say.
No, not effusive praise, but like it sounds a lot like. I guess I have to play it to get to the point where it no longer feels like XCOM, because it feels very much like XCOM right now.
It definitely doesn't, because I never felt dread. It never felt overwhelming. It's since you can really take your time and just examine a board and look for a way out in a way that you oftentimes do. A lot of XCOM is just dealing with failure, like,
yeah.
In a lot of ways, missions set you up to fail. You usually have a way to deal with things in Into the Breach. Not to say that XCOM is unfair, but XCOM in a lot of ways is a game that is about dealing with things going poorly. More than you pulling off a well-executed, like, surgical strike that you plan from the get-go. It's a lot more about things not going to plan, whereas the rules here are very defined and almost, like I said, like, puzzle-like.
I see what you mean. Okay, great. Everybody go buy Into the Breach.
I would suggest, I would definitely recommend it to people who aren't usually into strategy games. And
it's
all
a buy.
It's a buy. For fans of the genre and non-fans of the genre.
Nice.
Okay. Do you,
yeah, I want to talk about film because you've written in the show notes that Black Panther's politics are worse than expected. I don't want to keep belaboring the point of Black Panther. We've given it way too much time. Let's put it to bed right here, right now. Is this movie going to save Black America? Discuss.
An African monarch collaborates with a CIA agent.
Nice. Nice.
An African monarch by the name of Black Panther collaborates with the CIA.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah.
Like, I can't interpret that in any other way than the biggest just slap in the face.
You just, like, you're picturing Huey Newton's ghost just doing barrel rolls, just losing his mind. You're picturing, like Stokely Carmichael trying to hang himself with a ghost rope. Because he's a ghost.
Because he's a ghost. I had read about the CIA thing in passing. I thought that they were being facetious and calling the Avengers the CIA. Or S.H.I.E.L.D. the CIA, I guess, is probably, like, the more apt allegorical thing.
Yeah.
But no. He literally collaborates with a CIA agent.
Yeah, I know he's in Civil War. That's his first appearance. And he is a CIA. Yeah, there's no, it's not S.H.I.E.L.D. at all.
No, he's an intelligence agent. Like, that's
CIA, oh my god, Joint Chiefs? Jesus.
I listen, listen to me. I went into this movie.
Yeah.
And I made it almost a point to just go, like, you know, just let people have this. Just fucking just turn your dumb fucking brain off and, like, just enjoy the very good performances, because I will give it that. Lupita is fantastic. Michael B. Jordan, everyone's partner. They are, everyone's girlfriend is going to be stolen.
Yeah.
By Michael B. Jordan.
He's
and
Mr.
He earns it. He earned it.
He's Mr. Steal Your Gender.
Yeah, exactly. They are very good performance. I really liked M'Baku's actor. Like, he was
so fucking good.
He was so fucking funny. He was great.
He was so good.
Like, I really liked the cast, almost to the point where I found myself going, like, boy, this protagonist sure is kind of a bit lacking.
Like, well, that's because he was in a movie from the Russo brothers first, and it was either that carried over.
Like, oh my god, that makes so much sense.
That's totally,
you nailed
it.
You fucking nailed it.
It was either, like, okay, keep this character that the Russo brothers invented, or just pretend he doesn't exist and make this dude interesting.
They should have just, like, retconned it to where the T'Chanka, like, when T'Chanka dies in the explosion, like, T'Challa also dies, and his twin brother, T'Challa with three L's, is the main character in Black Panther. Yeah.
Oh my god. T'Challa with three L's. T'Challa.
That's the episode. Yeah, and then I was expecting this. We already talked about it. I went into this thinking, like, okay, it's gonna be Black Magneto.
Yeah.
Fine. All right. I guess, Black Magneto. I mean, whatever. It's a Marvel movie. Comic book movies. Expect nothing.
Yeah. Expect, like, nothing and be pleasantly surprised by them clearing a very, very low bar.
Even so, Michael B. Jordan's character was so nakedly, like, this weird straw man that, like, he seemed like a caricature of legitimate viewpoints. Like, well, I went into this expecting, like, oh my, they're going to do that ridiculously shitty Hollywood Shades of Grey thing.
Yeah.
They think that having a good villain is having a villain who has legitimate points.
Yep.
And it's gonna fucking suck, because inevitably that just leads to protagonists who just seem like they're just completely in the way of progress because fucking whatever. But even it was even worse than I expected. Like, I struggle to like articulate just how cartoonish he felt.
Yeah, how frustrating it is to
like he burns the fucking all the ritual all the super flowers, yeah. All the super plants.
Yeah.
And
by the way, spoiler alert: if you haven't seen it by now, I don't know what to do for you.
Fuck. You know what? Edit that out.
No, come on.
No, because I want people to be able to listen to this. It's hard to. Ah, fuck. Oh, whatever.
Fuck. Fine, it, dude.
Keep it in. Whatever.
They,
you're right. There's a moratorium on spoilers.
Go watch it.
You can edit all this out. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So he burns all the super flowers.
Yep.
And like immediately when he takes the throne, just starts acting like this fucking authoritarian douchebag with no respect for anybody but himself. Like all that big game that he talks about, like unity and looking out for like one's race, completely out the window the moment he takes the throne. Like, there's no sense. And ultimately I understand why that is, given like the characterization, but it does a disservice, I feel like, to the narrative, not the character,
yeah,
but to the narrative, because ultimately it forces a protagonist to take a very like, it just makes him a milquetoast liberal, like a liberal milquetoast, you know? Yeah. Like,
which he is.
The fucking end of the movie is them opening up a fucking embassy, like an embassy, right? Yeah. Like
they open up like a cultural exchange. The implication is that not only are they opening the borders, but they're gonna push hard on like sharing the technology and the intel and the resources and stuff.
Like, fucking what the fuck? I don't know.
I think that's okay. I totally agree. And I think that's sort of it's very, there's a lot of like mental and ideological gymnastics that people who are sympathetic to the points that Killmonger has to make, you have to do a lot of mental and ideological gymnastics to like come out of that movie and think to yourself, well, he did it. He accomplished his mission. But I think it's too subtle. It's too subtle, if it was even intentional, the effect that hold that the events of the film have had on T'Challa as a character. And there was definitely not enough time in like the epilogue, in the sort of denouement, to determine whether or not he truly understands that, like, hey, racism is bad, and you need to stop working with this CIA guy, and you need to start, you know, you need to start doing what he wanted you to do, which was go back to all the people that have been left behind, essentially, by Wakanda, and just sort of do some reparations, frankly. I actually saw an interesting take on that from Chadwick Boseman himself. In an interview, he was pretty adamant that he sees T'Challa as, like, the villain of the story, because mm-hmm. he is...
And I don't think that's a bad
no, not at
bad
all.
Read or a read that is incompatible with the narrative. I really don't. I think, and for that I'm willing to give it a modicum of like a pass, I guess. I understand like where possibly they were going with it, and especially and like I said, it's not a bad read. T'Challa himself disappears for like the like half of the final act of this movie.
Yep.
Like, and it's ultimately up to the fucking women to save the day.
Nice, dude.
You know? And yeah, nice.
Nice.
So I don't think he's wrong. I don't think that that's an incompatible reading of the movie, but I feel like it doesn't execute that well.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't execute that well because at its, you know, in its heart, in its core, you still have to work within the confines of like the traditional superhero, exactly. Superhero narrative, which Marvel has basically written the book on at this point. They've spent the better part of a couple decades writing this playbook, and now we can't tell stories where like the hero is wrong.
which is a shame. I went into it knowing that it was going to be kind of bad, but I was disturbed by the CIA thing, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was, I don't know, I never noticed that. I just kind of assumed, like, and whenever I see a white guy in a gray suit and a blue tie in a Marvel movie,
you think it's the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
I just S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
Yeah.
Which, it's like, what's the difference? It's a fucking, like, you know what an allegory is? Yeah, I know what an allegory is. But at least, there's some distance between, like, the actual name of the actual organization that for years orchestrated... I can't even begin to count how many. Yeah, like psyops.
Black communities, like, have been just so adversely affected by this organization that this African monarch, by the name of Black Panther, is now choosing to side with.
God, like, that seems like such an easy, like, that's not really relevant to the story at all.
No,
like,
it's such a useless fucking B-plot. I imagine, like, get that it's, like, I get that that's one of the, it's an easier way to transition into the embassy thing, but, like,
yeah.
Fuck.
And even then, like, you could literally change every instance of CIA in the script to S.H.I.E.L.D. and it wouldn't make any difference. But on top of that, like, it's really, like, I would love to sit Ryan Coogler down and be like, hey, what's up?
Let me pick your brain.
What were you going for here? Did you? It seems like you slept on this one a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't want to cast dispersions. Okay. And maybe, like, okay, if you were going to keep all the CIA stuff, which I don't even know if that's, like, what his character is. You know, it seems like a pretty fucking normal ass general authority figure that you could really stick in anywhere. You could have done something with it, like, you know, maybe address some of the history of the CIA and actually be like, hey, this is some stuff that you need to address as a African monarch who is working with this gentleman who is, like, I'm gonna do something I haven't done probably in, like, 6 or 7 years and give Martin Freeman some props, because he is the, you know, it's not even props, because he's not doing it on purpose. He just is, like, from his DNA, the perfect person to play a sort of background, nondescript background racist, sort of milquetoast fucking general authority figure, like, oh, I used to be a pilot. You know, that's so stupid.
I hated that whole.
That was so dumb. Fucking... Like, who needs.
On the whole, honestly, the climax of the movie felt a bit.
Yeah, they were kind of wrapping
up. The lead up
to it
was way better.
Daniel Kaluuya could have done that same thing.
Right? As his redemption?
That would have been cool. That would have been, like, his redemption. And then they could have, you know, the way they filmed that scene with the jet, like, at the end, he survives. That felt very forced to me. Like, it was fairly obvious that they filmed two endings to that scene where he lived or he died. And they just stuck in.
The test audience
sort of wrote that part of the film. They wrote that scene.
Martin Freeman dying was bad.
Yeah, it's bad. I would have put Daniel Kaluuya in. And then that way, it could be like, maybe there could be a little joke about how he doesn't know how to fly. He usually gets around, like, on ground
rhinos.
On rhinos. Yeah. And then he would be like, where's the reins on this thing, huh, guys?
Am I right?
That'd be a good joke.
Is this thing on?
Because he doesn't fly planes.
And that would also solve what will probably be a kind of a difficult narrative thing or character thing in the next one, where, like, where do those two go in the next, like, what kind of counseling will they be up for? Because, boy, that sure seems like a failed marriage right there.
Yep.
Yeah. So it would have been nice to just have him go like, yeah, this is my redemptive thing, and I, you know, this is how you're going to write me out, I guess. Because fuck you if you know what you're going to do with me in the next movie.
Yeah, now he's just going to be, like, in a jail cell somewhere. And he's not going to show up until the very end of Infinity War.
You think he'll be the big bad guy in the next Black Panther?
Yes, here's... Okay, I'm going to lay out for you the end credit scene
of
Infinity War. No, the end credit scene. I'm going to script it out for you. We are in the very, very deep, deep depths of a Wakandan Supermax prison. It's, like, 10,000 layers of reinforced vibranium under the earth. And it's just Daniel Kaluuya just bouncing a ball against a wall, you know, like Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
And so he's there.
His rhino's right there.
Yeah, his rhino.
It's a game of racquetball. They let him have...
him and his rhino are playing racquetball.
Prison racquetball.
In his vibranium cell. Yeah. And then... Stellan Skarsgård walks in, and he's like, "Who are you, Honky?" And then Stellan Skarsgård transforms into Loki, and he's like, "Same question." And then Loki smiles, and then it cuts to black.
Boom.
That's it. Then he's the new big bad. And Loki's at it again. And then in the next movie, they could do another classic Vine bit, back at it again with the betrayal.
Back at it again with betrayal.
Yeah.
And Loki just does backflips and kicks Thor in the face.
Man.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah. So we're done talking about Black Panther. We will never bring it up again. That movie's dead to us.
Yeah. I want to talk about Annihilation. But I also feel like it Annihilation is probably one of those movies where it's going to be another one of the more analytical segments of the podcast. So
it deserves it. I think you're
we'll
right.
We'll save it for next
That's,
time.
That one's top billing next time. Sorry, yeah. Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, too much. It's an honor to be nominated for discussion.
You got a little too much Tim Allen on you.
Can we clean
off some of that Timbaland.
Can we briefly mention Werewolves?
I don't know that one.
Okay, so Werewolves is... Apparently, they're going to make either a spiritual successor or a sequel to What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, my God. I was hoping that's what you were going to say. Holy shit. Yep,
it is. It fucking is.
Nice.
I'm very excited about that. I think Jermaine is back.
Fuck
in,
yeah.
So I'm going to guess it's a sequel. Or if not a sequel, then maybe just the exact same thing, but...
Oh, man. Is he a Russian wolf? Fuck yeah.
But the thing is that there were werewolves in What We Do, so
yeah,
I don't know if it's going to be following that pack. But since he's in it, I want to think. I would much rather it be like a mirror, like a direct mirroring of What We Do in the Shadows, but with werewolves. But I don't
what,
know.
What if Taika is trying to create his own
his cinematic universe?
Universe of B movie monsters.
This is the dark Universal Studios that we deserve.
Oh my God. What a stupid Hold on, let me write that down. Stupid fucking bullshit mummy dark universe bullshit. I'm gonna write that down in the show notes.
Send it to Universal.
Fucking
send an email to Universal
dark
Studios.
Universe bullshit. Okay. Yes.
Oh, man, that was. I've never seen something. I've never seen a harder comeuppance for a movie studio than the mummy. Like, just the hardest shutdown. Of a concept.
Just like,
the world voted no.
The world referred to the keypad under their seat and they hit that big beautiful red button.
Yep.
They were like, fuck Tom Cruise, fuck Russell Crowe, fuck
Was Russell Crowe in The Mummy?
Dude, Russell Crowe was the fucking... Wait, have you seen The Mummy?
I have not seen it.
Shut up, I'm gonna edit all that out.
No. No, I haven't seen it.
Dude, fucking...
Because I love myself.
So do you know what the Dark Universe is?
I mean, I refer to the Dark Universe as the cinematic universe of the Universal Monsters. Studio Monsters.
Yeah, but they started it off... Like, it's already connected.
Yeah,
because
I know.
Russell Crowe is Dr. Jekyll.
No, I did not know that. I thought there had been a... They had done another one. I thought they had done another one before this one, and I totally forgot already.
I don't think so.
I think. Hold on. Let me see. Dark Universe. We've been pretty good about Googling things.
We've like, been very diligent.
I feel like we deserve.
Yeah, a quick one.
We deserve a quick one here. Movies. Just to see which ones. Well, they're not coming up. See, it's such a non-starter.
Coming soon, the parentheses development hell.
Yeah, what the fuck? I thought that I could have sworn that there was one before.
I don't think so.
before the mummy. I thought there was like a brief like mention of one.
I'll tell you what, it probably would have behooved them to do one before the mummy, because this is like the anti 2008 Iron Man. We are paving the groundwork for the end of a franchise here. But fucking Russell Crowe is Dr. Jekyll, and it's just like, whatever, it's just, I'm a smart guy named Dr. Jekyll, and I have to take this potion or else I turn into Mr. Hyde. That's where the similarities end. Granted, the original story is not a very fucking rich vein of lore, it's like a fucking pamphlet, but it is the stupid, like, they're doing a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen thing, where it's like, oh, I am researching all these, I am researching all these stupid public domain monsters, and the mummy is one of them, Tom Cruise. So definitely just hang out with me here while I turn it into the guy. I'll punch you in the face because I'm Mr. Hyde.
Does Tom Cruise turn into the mummy?
I don't remember. I didn't actually watch it either. I just like saw a synopsis of it.
Like at the very least, we got that sweet trailer with no audio, like with audio channels removed.
What?
Juan, tell me you've seen that. The video where like someone took the mummy trailer and they removed some of the audio channels, like the music and some of the
sound effects. Oh right.
And it's
right,
just Tom
right.
Cruise like just kind of like grunting and yelling and it's very good.
That was funny.
Yeah. So yeah, fuck that.
Fuck that shit.
Fuck that shit. Do you want to move on to fine art?
Yes. Give me your art.
Could I? And can I step into the abattoir?
Yes,
this week?
Please. Here's the big meat cleaver of discourse. Just hack away.
Thank you so much.
Give him a shake. And just beat the devil out of him. That's when you find out who your friends are.
So I saw this article on, I think it was BuzzFeed, it appeared on my Facebook. I don't want anybody to think that I'm like browsing BuzzFeed in my own time. but I saw, people are losing their minds over this crazy food pairing. And I shit you not, it was ketchup drizzled over like three scoops of vanilla ice cream. And I said no. The world
clicked out of there.
Said no. Again. I'm fucking through. I'm done with it. I'm fucking sick of all these like articles claiming that a thing is a thing with it not being a thing. Nobody is saying you need to eat ice cream and ketchup. Maybe Denise from Louisiana took a spoonful of it and said like, well, this doesn't make me want to instantly throw up. So
yeah,
I guess it's a food pairing.
Yeah. I think the appeal behind a lot of that food is just like the novelty of like it being zany.
I think it's just people like it's what fries, like French fries with like dipped in Wendy's frosting has rot. Like that's and the thing is that the only reason that works is because it is actually the most illuminating food pairing that could be have in the United States, because at its core what it's the distillation, like the flavor, like the reason that it works is because you're essentially just eating sugar and salt.
Yeah.
That's the only reason that that's pleasing to your palate is because ultimately what you're shoving into your face when you go to fast food is either salt or sugar.
Yeah.
And now it has just spun wildly out of control to the point where people are trying to convince me, an adult person, someone with a life and like
a mortgage
and a moral compass and who's just trying to live their life the way they think it should be lived.
Just
trying to convince me that Cheetos with milk are good. You can just fucking take a bowl of Cheetos, pour some milk into it, and there you have a fine midnight snack for yourself.
I think probably if I was president, if I was the Fuhrer president of the world, if I was Fuhrer president King Bradley and I had that cool eyeball. Yeah. the first thing that I would do.
Kwong is king in Chinese, right?
I don't fucking know. Is it?
That's a joke.
I don't think so.
If you were Fuhrer,
if I was
Fuhrer Bradley,
if I was the homunculus Wrath, the first thing that I would do would be to outlaw all dairy, because A, as human beings, we don't need it, and B, I think dairy products bring out the worst in this community of people who try to make foods that aren't a thing, based purely on how many clicks it would get you in a listicle.
Okay.
I think that, like, all milk-based shit, all, we have just, in America, we have destroyed the concept of cheese. We're at the point where we're making, like, we're producing shit, we're producing it by the wheel, and bringing the wheel to the table, and just scraping the wheel off with, like, a superheated spatula or whatever, so that it melts as it comes off the wheel.
You could probably play a game of 6 degrees of separation with a Kraft single at this point. Like, how far away is it from
every
cheese,
food?
Really?
Like, how far away is a Kraft single from, like, those fried cockroaches?
It's more of a proxy cheese than anything. yeah,
this,
I'm with you.
This one time, I was in middle school, and it was in Texas, so I there was a lot of white kids. And okay. I was taking a... I don't know why I did this. To this day, I don't know why I did it. I don't do it anymore. And I did it for a little while there. I took a mustard packet from the condiments, squirted it out onto my cafeteria tray, cut off a piece of my apple that I had, and dipped the apple in the mustard and ate it. And it wasn't bad. It was pretty good. You know, it was like that sort of, you know, the clashing of the sweet and the tangy. It was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And people around me, like, you know how kids are in middle school. They're, like, really insecure. And anything that goes against their very, very fragile worldviews, they're just like... Like, they were like, what are you doing? You can't do that. That's mustard. I know that apple is kind of, if you zoom in on it real close, it might resemble vaguely the texture of a hot dog, but it's not, and you can't do that. That's illegal. I'm going to tell the teachers that you do it. One kid actually did threaten to, like, tell a teacher. And I tried to sort of convince him, like, oh, like, it was just as a goof. I didn't mean to go anywhere with it, but he was pissing me off. So I was like, oh, this is how we do it in Puerto Rico. We put mustard on our apples, and then we eat them up, and it's good. And they were all like, it was an immediate, like, I had them. Like, oh, that's how they do it. Like,
oh,
whoa,
fuck,
that's so weird.
Mom said I had to not.
It wasn't even that. It was just like, oh, I don't know. I don't know enough about Puerto Rico to dispute that. I don't even know. I don't even know if there's, like, a road bridge there or not. I don't know where you're from.
You all turned into Mac.
Yeah. But, like, if I hadn't had, like, that trump card, it would be impossible to convince people that it was a thing, no matter how it tasted, because I don't have, like, a community of people backing me up.
Right.
So that's why that shit works, because it always the focal point of it is always some aggregator like that, like BuzzFeed, and inevitably you will get amplification of, like, a vocal minority who's like, I'd try that. Put some fucking Heinz on these scoops. Put some Heinz on this soft serve. Let's go to town.
Fuck yeah. I just don't want to... I don't want to live in a country where there is a distinct possibility I just walk into my favorite ice cream parlor ready to just indulge in some sweet ice cream with my girlfriend after a long, hard week of work. And I just
don't want... One float, two straws.
One float, two straws. I don't want there to be even the remotest possibility of seeing a fucking bottle of Heinz as one of the fucking dessert toppings.
Yeah.
No.
It's really... I mean, tomatoes are a fruit.
I would ask to speak with the manager.
I will say that tomatoes are a fruit, like, legally.
And,
like,
I mean,
it's in the Bible.
But that's the thing. Ketchup is basically sugar. So,
yeah, again, that's what I'm saying. Is that like ketchup? Like, if you were an alien and you just came to Earth and was like, "What kind of condiments you guys got? What are you working with?" And you just showed the alien a bottle of Heinz and you were like, "This is a fruit compote," and you would be 100% correct, legally.
No.
This is a fruit compote, and it's we can put it on this ice cream. Yeah, it's like smushed.
By definition, it's not a compote. I'm going to look up the Wikipedia definition of compote.
Compote is French for smushed. That's what it is.
Compote.
We've already met our Google quota. You can't Google anything
else
if you Google
this. Fine, I won't bring
this
up what shows up, but I feel vindicated. Just
no,
so
go
you know
ahead. What is it? No, let's go. Let's hear it.
All right, compote is a dessert originating from medieval Europe made of whole or pieces of fruit and sugar syrup. Whole fruits are cooked in water with sugar and spices. The syrup may be seasoned with vanilla, lemon, or orange peel, cinnamon sticks or powder, cloves, other spices, ground almonds, grated coconut, candied fruit, or raisins. The compote is served either warm or cold. Fuck you, Juan.
I mean, that's almost exactly ketchup.
Basically.
Like, you smush... What do? You smush the tomatoes, you put sugar and salt and vinegar and other shit in it if you're, like, fancy.
Other things?
Other things. Things I can't pronounce. GMOs.
Xanthan gum? That's in
propylene glycol.
Yeah. Thing
from deodorant.
I just wanted to...
That is fine art.
Yeah, fuck...
Today you are an art critic.
Thank you. I feel distinguished.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about? I don't. Do you really want to talk about Szechuan sauce?
No, God no.
Okay,
this is
good.
Way better.
That was a joke. Was that a?
No. I mean, I wanted to make one goof about it, but it's
okay,
not
what's,
worth
what's
talking
a,
about for
what's
even
a goof?
30
no,
seconds.
No, what's a goof? What's a goof?
I can't even. I have to think of one now because I didn't think of one before the show because
oh, well,
I just saw the
really
ketchup ice cream.
You really put the cart before the horse there, huh?
The reason I put it on is because there was news that like the Szechuan sauce like was actually poorly received.
I thought you put it on because they were going to bring it back.
No, they brought it back already. Like, it's out and people are blasting McDonald's now because it's underperform. Like, there's go on any Kinja site right now. There's tons of Szechuan headlines, and they're all saying the same thing, that it's like bad, it's underperforming, people are criticizing it, it's not good. And I'm like, what the fuck are you people talking about? Are you people insane? Like, every time McDonald's has a new, like, oh, we got a new burger, Applewood smoked bacon and ice cream, nobody, like, yeah, it's bad, it's McDonald's. Of course it's bad. Are you holding them to the very, very high standards that they've set by their brilliant sauces like barbecue and ranch?
I feel like on the low, like low key, like people have been going to fast food a little bit less, more and more, which especially I think McDonald's has been struggling a little bit lately. So maybe like people just kind of forgot, you know, like what it was. They just kind of had this concept in their minds about what it would taste like. And then, like, once they had it again, it's like, oh, right. This costs a dollar.
You're saying they've been going to Chipotle so much they've
that
spoiled their palates.
That top shelf.
They're about
food.
That quick service restaurant game. It's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on. Hit the bumper.
Woo! Okay, so I still haven't watched the videos, but I want to talk about Janelle Monáe. And I know you want to talk about Janelle Monáe. So let's talk about Janelle Monáe. So the first one I listened to, the Django, what's the name of it? It's Django something.
No, you got it. Django something.
Django something. That's
Django something by Janelle Monáe.
That's by
it's Django Jane, isn't it?
Django Jane?
I think so.
Django Jane. Are you sure?
Yeah, it's Django Jane.
Okay, cool.
I googled it because I have another Google left in my inventory.
See, the first time I listened to Django Jane, I was like, all right, I didn't know that she could spit bars like this. This is neat as a song like that is trying to like showcase this other aspect of her, but
mm-hmm.
the more I kind of sat down to listen to some of the more I listened to the lyrics, and I don't want this to sound too disparaging, but at some points, it did remind me of Childish Gambino's first forays into the hip hop genre.
Really?
A little bit.
Was there blatant fetishization of Asian women? Was there?
No. It's nothing like problematic or anything. It literally is just in regards to flow and like rhyme scheme.
Okay.
And reliance on like puns and like punchlines that don't always land all the way.
Give me an example.
The very first, we're gonna start a pussy riot. Gonna put him on a pussy diet.
Yeah.
I like
that one.
You like that one?
I like that one. I mean, it's a line. It's a clear message. It's women need to start a new arm themselves for the revolution. And if they don't comply, then you put them on a pussy diet.
All right.
Which is, okay, the notion of, like, that's an interesting thing to explore, the sort of cultural baggage that comes with the concept of withholding sex from men, right? Because withholding sex from women, we don't need to talk about. That's a fucking punchline that's as old as time. Nobody gives a shit. But, like, withholding stuff from men it's sort of sparks an interesting conversation about, like, how men are conditioned to think about sex.
Okay.
Right? And I don't want to be gender essentialist here, like male identifying, whatever. Like the cultural concept of the man thinks about sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's hard to sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Reconcile a woman having agency while simultaneously making the assertion that sex and consent to sex is in any way like a powerful weapon or a weapon that is like meaningful and that should be exercised. Like, I understand that in an ideal world, we would never get to that point. Like in a civilized society, something as barbaric, I guess it's sort of digs into our primal instincts, you know, because in a civilized society, like if we're so fucking advanced, if we are so separate from the beasts, right, then this shouldn't be an issue. But it is. It does have power because, you know, every day women get abused and assaulted and killed for less. So I think even if it just sort of makes you think about sex in those terms, I think it goes hard.
Okay.
And I think it's sort of deep.
All right. I mean, that's, I feel like that's a valid take, certainly. I probably wasn't thinking about it in those terms. I was definitely more thinking about the actual like cadence and like actual like the rhyme scheme and stuff itself. But yeah, content wise, certainly, I like a lot of it.
Okay, so should I cut out that whole thing then?
No, not at all.
I'll cut it out. It's fine.
I hate you.
No, riot and diet. I think that's a pretty solid what's it called? Hard rhyme.
I will say
this: the one immediately after that, quiet inspired. That's a bit of a reach there.
There are some stretches, honestly, like.
And I do see what you mean by like early Gambino, like Camp era, I guess.
I'm thinking strictly Camp. In terms of like when I listen to this, I can't help but think like, yeah, this is something that like someone who doesn't listen to hip hop too much would probably be into. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You know, like those like I don't normally listen to hip hop, but I really like this. I can definitely see that forum post in my mind.
Did you write that forum post?
Absolutely not.
Like, I'm big into Titus Andronicus and stuff, but this is pretty good, huh?
This goes ham, right? Am I right?
This is this is a hot bar. This is a heat rock,
as the kids say. But that's where I'm coming from, like, in terms of it, like, kind of falling short, in terms
I will say this. It doesn't seem like, and obviously the album hasn't come out yet, but mm-hmm. already, compared to the songs on, what's it called? The, her last one, the Android one? Her last album. Electric Lady? Yeah, Electric Lady. It seems like they're not going as heavy on, like, the world building of this concept album. Like, it seems like it's less narrative concept and more.
So you're saying sort of, this is the color before the color before the what's it called? The Color Before the Sun.
yeah.
Memory Saga.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he cited Coheed as a direct
inspiration. I don't see them making a graphic novel out of this one. It's just sort of a bunch of shapes and colors.
I would buy an Arcandroid graphic novel.
Yeah, no, I would definitely.
I'm surprised that that actually isn't already a thing.
Well, you know, if you're not a white guy with a guitar, what are you supposed to do?
Please visit our Kickstarter for the Arcandroid graphic novel.
Yes. Visit today. We are offering a very limited reward tier for the first 300 backers. We will personally record a sick cover of Django Jane. It's going to be called Django Juan.
Django
Juan. Shit. Please. Fuck. God damn it. Django Juan. And it's going to be great.
Save that one.
You guys are going to get... totally uncompressed files in Ogg Vorbis format. Very good for the audio files out there.
Lossless quality, lossy content.
Man, that would be a good... Is it too late to change the tagline of our podcast? And also, is it too late to start putting out, like, lossless files? Put everything in Ogg Vorbis on iTunes.
This time, I'm going to upload. I'm not uploading a WAV file. I'm going to upload an FLAC.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really like the other one.
Make me feel.
This was a good amuse-bouche, but the way you make me feel is just on a whole other level for me. I've been like humming that since I listened to it. Like,
I think
not a day goes by. And
yeah.
I don't know if you... Did you ever listen to the most recent St. Vincent album, the one she put out last year?
No, I heard a couple songs, but
Los Angeles.
No,
there's this one song, I think it's called Savior. And that is, like, the most Prince-ass, Prince homage...
Yeah.
...of 2017, probably. And mm-hmm. this song totally reminds me of that. Like, in and of itself, it sounds very Prince-y, but... Yep. It specifically sounds like Prince by way of like the way that Saint Vincent handled it, sick guitar bend that it has to it is really nice. Go ahead.
If you like Prince, you really need to get on that video because like. It gets you there.
Fuck, I really want to see it. I'm looking at the video thumbnail.
Do you want to just pause the podcast for 3 minutes and
No, it's fine. I'll look at it on my own time. I'm looking at the thumbnail. I already want those sunglasses so that I could look like a fucking... The thing is, that she looks, like, amazing with those sunglasses. If I put on those sunglasses, I would look like the world's worst Gary Oldman as Dracula cosplayer.
Yeah, it's an acquired look.
And I just, no, I'd never be able to pull it off.
That video.
Could you picture
also,
it in your mind's eye and just.
You should just draw it and we'll make, that'll be the new album art.
There you go. Perfect.
I will say something else. That video, it's, how can I put this, tactfully? It, really, put a little gas in my engine, if you know what I'm talking about.
Do you have to contact your accountability partner?
I had to probably send an addendum along to that weekly report that the Covenant Eyes browser sends to my pastor.
To the Vatican.
To the Vatican.
To the Vatican Intelligence Agency.
Cardinal Rigoletto and his translator.
I need a word that starts with T so that it can be Vatican Intelligence Agency. Like, I need something between intelligence and agency so that it's Vita.
Vita. Vatican Intelligence and Transparency Agency. Because they want you
good.
To be transparent
That's
about
really
how,
good.
How,
That's
how good
you're
whacking.
That's perfect one. You fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
I love you. See, this is why we're a good team.
Yep.
You complete my stupid fucking Latin punchlines.
We did it. We did it. And now the Latin scholars who listen to our podcast really got a kick out of it.
That's for all the fans. That's for the fans.
Yep.
So it was good. And it put some gas in. Would you say gas in your engine?
It put a little pep in my step.
And you're a pep in your step. Okay.
Yeah. It's she's never looked better.
Okay. Is that a YouTube like, or are you just happy to see me? Yeah, she looks great with the look is definitely great.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's the costume design. Like, for both videos it's very good, but for Django Jane it's mostly just suits, you know, pantsuits.
What? And a Janelle Monáe video?
Which is yeah, exactly. They're fantastic. She owns that look. But it's very different in Make Me Feel, and it's brings a different kind of energy. It's right. Good energy.
Cool. Please listen to Janelle Monáe for the love of God.
Please, can we get her on? Can we just get her the EGOT? I feel like she's close, right? Didn't Hidden Figures win something?
I think so. I don't know if she was directly up for it.
Yeah, probably not.
But anyway, yeah, she deserves all the success she can get, probably.
Yep, for sure.
I'm sorry, let me untie it.
No, I got it.
No, I got it. No. Don't stick.
Did I do that?
So, do you finally want to talk about this TV content, or are we just going to completely obviate the the TV segment?
The thing about TV, you know what? Recently, when I redid the album art, mm-hmm. I got rid of TV, and my justification for it at the time was sort of just like, you know, film can mean a lot of things. Anything that happens in front of a camera to me is film, you know? How about this? What? Let's talk about Black Mirror. Season 1, episode 1, the climax of the episode, the Prime Minister of England has sex with a pig and broadcasts it. On national television, on the BBC.
Didn't the Australian Prime Minister actually admit to having sex with a pig and
wait,
broadcast
what?
It? Let me see who it was.
What?
Yeah.
You're shitting me. Okay, we're breaking the Google embargo again. Fuck me.
Piggate.
So many.
There's a Wikipedia page for Piggate. Refers to an uncorroborated anecdote that during his university years, former British Prime Minister David Cameron put a private part of his anatomy into a dead pig's mouth as part of an initiation ceremony for the Piers Gaveston Society.
Dude, what the fuck? That's the exact plot. Are you kidding me? I thought that was such an original fucking premise. That literally happened?
I thought it was the Australian PM.
I watched a documentary about a guy who had sex with a pig? Fuck me. Well, my worldview is shattered.
Shattered. Absolutely destroyed. Yeah. So what are we doing for this segment, then?
Nothing. We're jettisoning it.
Jettisoning it?
Yeah. Oh. We're not talking about TV, because TV is dead, as much as Time Warner Cable won't admit it.
Did you want to
all
talk
of
about,
you, we
you
will want, bury you.
Don't you want to talk about this is the end of the fucking world?
About the end of the fucking world?
Yeah.
No, because it's something you really have to see. It's something that Jaisha and I watched together. Mm-hmm. We binged, like, the entire first season. Just because, like, I was into it, but she was, like, wicked into it. Do you know what it is?
I have no idea what it is.
It's a love story about these two British teens. It's based on a graphic novel. It's this girl who's kind of tortured, and she has a kind of a bad family life, and she skateboards, and she's angry at everybody, and she doesn't like cell phones, and she just wants, like, everybody to stop being such fucking phony. It's like a real Holden Caulfield type.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy is he kills animals for fun.
Okay. like in a young prepubescent like magnifying glass ant.
No, like he's a murderer. Like he kills cats and birds and stuff.
Oh, so like a teenage kind of like
stabbing. Yeah, like a teen
stabbing opossums and shit.
Yeah, but he's like he's working up to
he's a teenage dirtbag.
Yeah, he's working up to kill his first human being.
Oh, I see.
And that's when he meets this girl, and then he's like, oh, cool, I'll kill her, I guess. I'll pretend to fall in love with her, which entails just, like, some pretty funny shots of him just sitting on a bench letting her, like, wail on him with her tongue.
Okay.
Because she's just sort of doing it just to get back at her parents in a sort of act of rebellion. But obviously, like, he doesn't kill her. And a sort of whirlwind romance ensues from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty, like, it's weird. It was just this weird thing that popped up on Netflix that was, like, the trailers made it very clear that this boy was going to murder this girl. And I was like, man, do I want to watch this?
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, sanity prevailed and was like, this guy's not going to kill her. And he didn't. And it was actually a pretty interesting, tense, entertaining story about these two kids that ended very satisfyingly. Unfortunately, now they're in talks to do like a second season, which I just despise. Like, I hate when people try to overextend a perfect story. Like, we don't need it. Like, much like Pacific Rim, you know.
I disagree, because the thing about Pacific Rim that I liked wasn't the story. It was probably the character like Mako's relationship with Pentecost certainly is one of the things I enjoyed about it. But like if you asked me like, hey Scabby, do you think that Pacific Rim 2 is going to be an insult to like Pacific Rim's legacy? I'd be like, no.
I mean, okay, I guess okay, you got me there. It's not gonna. It's pretty hard to put a dent in that legacy when it's just robot porn.
Yeah. By his own admission. By Guillermo del Toro's own admission.
Yeah. And I guess that means we're still going to go see it.
I'm going to see it.
God damn it. If that
song, see, we were talking about TV and we ended up talking about movies.
Okay, this is important. If that fucking song comes on, even, like, faintly in the back, even if, like,
Even if John Jake Boyega Pentecost, is listening to it,
Jake Pentecost
like,
walks into
headphones.
Like, yeah, no, Jake Pentecost walks into like the urinals, and then a dude comes into the urinal next to his, and that song is playing in the other guy's headphones. I will walk out of the theater.
Give it on to.
And it's like Jake Pentecost will be peeing, and the sound of his urine hitting the porcelain is gonna like mask it a little bit. It doesn't matter. I will walk out.
That's fair.
I'm so mad.
It's especially it's sad because like, I actually think if I'm remembering it correctly, which I think I am, the first film had an innocuous to pretty decent soundtrack.
It was like it was good. Like it was very good for what it was. It didn't. Ramin Djawadi. He like I have had my eye on him ever since he. I think it was his first sort of big movie, the first Iron Man movie. Hmm. That was sort of, like, that's I think, very much his wheelhouse, is he just looks at a bunch of metal clanging together and he's like, cool,
yeah,
I can score that.
Yeah, I totally,
give me a couple minutes, fellas.
I got this. I'm going to make something that just gets you pumped the fuck up.
Yeah, and then they brought Tom Morello in for that one song.
One of my favorite YouTube videos is that cat that's in, like, physical rehabilitation, walking underwater, like his feet are his legs are underwater, and it's just the Pacific Rim theme playing over that. It's very good.
Oh man, that's funny.
Yeah. All right. So is that it for the?
Yeah, I think we're done here. I think people have had enough of us. I apologize. I apologize if I've been particularly lethargic this episode. I am coming down with like a sickness because there's a nor'easter here in Boston. Yeah, okay, there it is. There it is, folks. We got it. We're hard rockers here on Pony.
I said I liked Metal Juan, okay?
Yeah, we're big.
I meant it.
I love those guitars. But thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, any social media under the sun, except mm-hmm. the ones that we don't have, which are mm-hmm. numerous.
You can find me at Celestial W Trash yep. Twitter. You can also find me at A Song of Ice and Fire and A Song of Ice and Fire Pro Wrestling on Tumblr. We're gonna yep. find you, Juan.
They can find me in my bathroom vomiting because I very much don't feel well.
Aww.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Do you have a joke? An outro joke?
Yeah. Yep. Here's the one for this week. Mm-hmm. I was at my bookstore where I work, mm-hmm. And I saw a book called... Okay, let me see if I can find... Because I wrote the title down, and it was very funny. It was about men being mindful of, like, checking themselves for prostate... the title was Revenge of the Prostate Snatchers. That was the name of the book, right? Now, I think that Revenge of the Prostate Snatchers, as far as titles about nasty, nasty glands go, that's a great title.
But.
That's it. But. Do you get it?
Oh my god, Juan.
Yeah.
That Norris really is not keeping you down.
No, I wrote that like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. But still, that's good. That yeah. landed. Good job.
Yeah, thank you.
I have one too, but I don't know if we should just do like a rotating, like an alternating thing.
Yeah, let's alternate. Yeah, you got to beat that one next week.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you as always for listening to the first podcast in recorded history.
Yep, the first, but not the worst.
Yep. All right.
Peace. Okay.